Wondering how to navigate local, city, state, or the federal government in order to grow your business, secure funding for your nonprofit, or advance your organization's agenda? Welcome to Lobbying Insider, a podcast that brings listeners to the intersection of business and government to provide a rare perspective on how things actually get done. We will dive into some pressing current issues, provide keen observations from the past, and keep an ever-watchful eye on what's coming next. I'm your host, Zach Fink, Director of External Affairs at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron. Glad to have you with us. The Marijuana Regulation and Taxation Act passed as part of the state budget in 2021 in Albany. It established the Cannabis Control Board. And since then, there have been a lot of efforts to make some changes, but now we do have the program up and running in New York State. And we're going to take a deep dive today into a little bit about what that program has been and some of its successes. We are joined by our own Nick Terzulli. Nick, good to have you with us.
Oh, thanks, Zach. Great to be here.
And Michael Gardner. Michael, tell us just a little bit about your background here.
So I'm from upstate New York, Schenectady to be exact. I was a barber for several years, impacted by the Rockefeller laws. 2011, I believe, was when I caught my charge.
All right, so let me ask you a little bit about that. So you now have a dispensary, right? That's a legal dispensary in New York State. What's that called?
The Bakery.
Okay, yep. And that is located upstate?
Upstate, yep. It's Cohoes, New York, 1099 New Loudoun Road.
Okay, gotcha. Yep. What New York did, which is a little different than other states when they passed the MRTA, was that they wanted to establish access to shops, legal shops, for individuals who may have been touched by the criminal justice system when it came to either possession or is selling small amounts of marijuana. Laws that in hindsight, now that we look at, now that we have marijuana is legal in New York State, we look back at it and we say, you know, that was kind of silly. Those are not good reasons to punish people, to put them behind bars, for example, especially now that we've been moving in this direction. That's unique in a lot of ways, and in some ways it's really paid off. Tell us, if you could, Michael, just a little bit about your experience and what happened and where does it stand now in terms of what happened to you?
So 2011 is when I caught a charge. I was convicted of possession. It was a felony at the time. Went to jail, served my time, had some post-release supervision. You know, and when I got out, I was very, you know, I was frowned upon. Yeah. You as soon as you marked on a piece of paper that you were a convicted felon, you felt the air from the room escape, basically. And coming from a strict Italian family household, it was, you know, personally, it was tough with family too.
Right.
God rest her soul, my Nana, very strict, you know, and she didn't understand what I was doing and why I did it at the time. If she could see me now, maybe she would have a little bit different point of view.
Right.
And especially with the rest of the country, specifically New York, accepting us, if you will.
The laws are kind of catching up to public sentiment, right? I mean, wouldn't you say for a long time there was a different attitude about marijuana than there were, certainly about harder narcotics. Yeah. And it appears as though with the federal government unable or unwilling to act, states have moved into place and really caught up with where people are.
To not touch too much on like politics, if you will, but because I don't really like to get into that. But I think that there's a lot of people out there that, you know, either smoke or ingest THC or cannabis that don't want you to know that they ingest or smoke. And that stigma is, I think, leaving. And I do think that as the years come, you know, you will start to see more people just openly using. And, you know, the medical benefits, the, you know, social benefits, like we call it recreational, but a lot of people that I'm seeing, especially now in the dispensary, is people that have issues and they don't want to take pills anymore. You know, my liver can't take it. My kidney can't take it. What can you help me with? And like, I'm not a doctor or a pharmacist, but what I can tell you is that cannabis helps people.
Right.
It really does.
It's medicinal qualities.
Yeah. And more so more than tobacco and alcohol.
Right.
And like that stuff is shoved down our throats everywhere you turn. I mean, I came from upstate New York. I passed a bunch of billboards and I couldn't tell you how many were for some type of alcohol or if you will, I don't think I saw any tobacco ones, but that whole movement, if they're able to advertise and they're shoving that down your throat, I mean, alcohol hurts people.
Well, right. I don't have the statistics at my fingertips, but yes, the number of alcohol-related deaths and tobacco-related deaths in this country are astounding.
Yeah, and then give me, you know, if we look up the statistics for cannabis-related deaths, I'm sure they're... You know,
it may not be zero, but it's not far from zero.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yes. And listen, smoke inhalation is definitely not good for you, right?
Sure.
We know that. Right. But like, there's different ways to ingest THC, the you know, cannabinoids, CBD, CBN, you know, even THCV, you know, these things, CBG, they help people, you know, and there's different ways to ingest it. You don't have to smoke it. You can eat it. You can tinctures underneath your tongue. There's tablets now, there's breath mints, you know, this stuff helps people.
There's been, and through legalization at the state level, there's been real innovation in terms of the ability to ingest. So, right. So you can get away from something like smoking, and your record at this point completely expunged. I know that that was part of the Marijuana Reform Act.
Yes. So they expunged my record. I didn't even have to apply for it. It just happened. I remember the day vividly when they announced it. You know, I was in the barber shop. I was watching the television. I think it was C-SPAN that they were announcing it on, and tears of joy. I was jumping up and down, and everybody's looking at me like, what's going on? I'm like, you don't understand what's happening in this, and it's going to be a revolution. I mean, when New York State jumps on board, I think nationally you're going to start to see some changes too.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of like paved the way. I mean, this is the Empire State for a reason. And
yeah. No, New York is a leader. One of the largest states in the country, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Nick, how did you guys link up and where did you see this kind of opportunity? Because of course the state was really trying to get people like Michael, who have been, you know, affected by the criminal justice system in one way or another related to marijuana, and really kind of wanted to give them a leg up in this brand new budding industry.
Yeah, so much of what we do at the firm is work with clients from different spectrums, navigate both the political, legal, and regulatory impasses that they encounter as they try to reach their goal. And the cannabis sector is really a perfect example of this. And Michael came to our Albany office with his story and said, hey, I know New York now is taking applications for this new cannabis program, and they're requesting people apply who've had prior criminal records. It's called the Conditional Adult Use Recreational Dispensary Program. And Michael thought he was a perfect candidate for this, and upon talking to him, we realized he was absolutely right. He's exactly the type of person that this program was designed to help. And it's been, you know, an arduous process. There's no doubt about it, but certainly very rewarding. And I know, you know, OCM, the Office of Cannabis Management, has had obstacles, and there have been lawsuits and injunctions and various issues along the way. But I think Michael and I can both stand here today and proudly say we are very thankful for the Office of Cannabis Management and the program that they created and what they're doing in the state to give folks like Michael, you know, an opportunity to be a successful entrepreneur.
Yeah, it was a little rocky out of the gate, and I do think, in fairness to the state, this was brand new, right? It was a difficult undertaking. You're creating a brand new industry. There were some bumps along the way. In both of your assessment, do you get the sense that the ship has righted a little bit and that they're now moving in the right direction?
I want to commend the OCM on the efforts that they have given forth. I will say that they've gotten a lot of scrutiny, and they're human too. You know, they created a program from scratch that didn't exist, and the one thing that New York has tried to do is, like you said, help people in my position.
Yeah.
Help people like no other program has. If you look state to state, nobody's ever tried to help people that were displaced or had misfortune because of the Rockefeller laws. And, you know, I think they're getting a lot of backlash because things didn't go smoothly in the beginning. But again, I think they're doing it right. You have to kind of release and choke. If you don't, you allow what I like to call the vultures to come in and kind of ruin things for the bottom folks, for the people on the bottom. And I know Nick's probably shouldn't say some of these things, but like, I really
in a safe space here.
I really want to hit home on the fact that I think OCM has done a great job. Everybody that I've personally either emailed or spoken to on the phone has been very polite, very concerned, very, yeah.
They're helpful. They want, folks like Michael to succeed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So there are regulatory issues, and there's certain things we have to do as applicants and as attorneys for the applicants to make sure we check all the boxes and comply with the, I don't know, 1,000 pages of regulations. Yeah. But that said, the office really wants to be helpful.
Yes,
and, you know, as of today, there are, I think, 100 retail stores open throughout the state, which is really a significant milestone.
I was 92.
You were. Okay.
Yeah. Which is, you know, to make it into the first 100 is like,
yeah.
You know, people, the way I look at it, right, in 20 years from now, they're going to be like, you know, they're going to be looking back on this program and they're going to be like, who were the, who paved the way?
The pioneers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Who was right. in the forefront?
And I'm sure that had some growing pains, you know.
Yeah. On both sides too.
Right.
You know, the
right.
OCM and myself and Nick can attest to this. There was a lot of things that like I, A, didn't understand at the time. B, I didn't want to understand at the time, and see like why isn't things moving faster, and I had to reel it back in and just realize that like these are human beings that are trying to control an entire state yeah. of a market that didn't exist before. I just had to reel it back in and just really
it's their first time too.
Exactly. Right, that's right. Exactly it. That's,
and there are certain challenges, right, logistically that are can't be overcome. Like, for example, you can't have FDIC insurance, right? Yeah. It's a cash business, right? You can't necessarily. So just some of those challenges that and getting off the ground and not being able to do some of the more traditional things that a different type of store would be able to do.
100%. And from owning another business, that was some of the frustrations that I was experiencing and still experiencing today. Like, why can't we do certain things? And obviously, it's because we're not federally legal, right?
Right.
Right at this moment. I think you'll start to see that change. Like I touched on a little earlier, is that, you know, I think New York's going to pave the way mm-hmm. for the nation. I think people really pay attention to New York. And again, not to get too political, but they during tough times and during new times, people pay attention to New York.
Yeah.
They look to see what New York is doing, what the big city is doing, what the people in this state are doing. And did they do it right? Did they do it wrong? What can we change? And I think you'll start to see some changes soon.
And are there challenges, Nick, just in terms of, you know, having it be a cash business, in terms of where the product actually has to come from? My understanding is that it's mostly grown outside. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So in New York, retailers are required to purchase kind of upstream from other New York vendors, right? So there's no ability to purchase legally from other states. You know, when New York rolled this program out, they really created a whole market. And I know we've said this a few times on the show, but everything from the growers to the cultivators, the distributors, the processors.
Vertically integrated.
All vertically integrated. And I know Michael has had, you know, pretty good experiences so far with some of his colleagues in the industry. Can you maybe expand upon that?
Yeah. So there's a couple growers and processors that I touched base with, you know, over a year ago. And we kind of lost touch when the injunction happened and stuff like that. But we've grown to become friends now. First name basis, text messages, phone calls, you know, and they're happy to help. And that's, I think that's the biggest thing that I want people to understand, is that the people in this industry that I've personally dealt with are here to help. Like, they're not here to cause issues. They just want to help people, you know, and help people in my position, help other people too. It's not just, you know, not just people that were affected by the Rockefeller laws, but as things go on, they're going to try to help.
It's really a community, right? So even other retailers don't see themselves as competitors, more as colleagues.
Yeah,
they share best tips and strategies.
Yeah,
it's really a nice feeling that everybody wants to succeed together.
How does it affect the product, Michael, when you have something like an outdoor growing requirement? I mean, do you find yourself either in competition with other states? Does it put you at a disadvantage?
So allegedly, I know how to grow. And I've grown before, allegedly. so
not giving too much away.
So I will say this: outdoor crops tend to be more airy, leafy. The aroma can be more of like a hay smelling. Okay. If it's not,
these are not compliments.
These are not these are not compliments. No.
But just to be clear to the uninitiated,
what I will say is that the growers that are growing right now have done an outstanding job with the circumstances that they've been placed in.
Okay.
Everybody knows when you grow outside, typically indoor crops do better than outside.
They do. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's, I don't know what the right word I'm looking for to describe.
They thrive. They
thrive indoors. Yeah. Yes. And everybody that grows knows this, and New York State has tried to keep it outside. Don't know why. I haven't.
Presumably to protect the farmers, but yes. I don't see why farmers couldn't do it indoors either, right?
Yes, and I think we're going to start to see some changes too with that. I know that there's some facilities that have been growing indoors that supply some medical facilities, and I think they've kind of tried to pave the way for other growers to say, listen, this crop does better indoors in a controlled environment. And when we see that, when people are able to control the environment, I think the consumer at the end of the day will benefit. It'll be good for everyone.
A lot of the conversation now, just as we look at this, and the legislature is currently up in Albany looking to potentially make more changes to the law. They've done some tweaks, you know, year after year to try. And that, it, by the way, is very common in Albany, which is they pass something comprehensive. You're legislating for 20 million people. You then have to go back. You have to make tweaks. You have to make adjustments, you know, depending on how well the law is working. But one of the issues that we keep coming back to is kind of the proliferation of illegal shops, which you see certainly here in New York City, all over the place.
Yeah.
How does that affect you? I mean, are you getting undercut by either a better product or just an ease with which people can buy that illicit product?
So this conversation has come up several times in this type of setting and amongst friends, family, because it's no stranger. Marijuana, cannabis has been sold, grown, bought for a very long time on the illegal market. So like it's not just going to disappear, right?
Right.
So what I will say is that I feel like the people that are coming into an actual legit cannabis store, a dispensary like mine, are not necessarily looking for the stuff that's on the street. They're looking for, number one, safe product. Number two, product that's been locally sourced. You know, especially here in New York, we're like farm to table. We pay attention to the farmers.
People want that with their food. There's no reason why they wouldn't want that here.
This is a consumable product. I mean, essentially, some of it is food. It's, you know, so that I will say, you know,
works to your advantage.
Yeah, it works to our advantage. And I feel like the market will sustain itself because people, you know, not everybody wants to pick up the phone call and meet a drug dealer on the, on a back alley somewhere.
Right.
And not everybody wants to walk into one of these illegal shops that like, not that I've been in any, but I've heard stories like they don't seem like the safest places in the world. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's one thing I feel like that New York State has done a good job with, especially the OCM with security, you know, being safe, keeping people safe.
My God, I'm just thinking back to the camera requirements that we spent days and days.
Tell me about
and days
that. What
going
was it
through? And, it's just a very the amount of cameras, recording cameras that the state requires in each legal dispensary is really significant.
I mean,
the eye in the sky
surveillance
sees
equipment.
Everything all the time.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right. With how many day backup? 30-day or 60-day?
60-day backups for all your cameras. So you can go back 2 months in my store.
Is this for your safety or for the consumer?
You know, I think it's a little of both. It may be overkill, but I will tell you this. After doing it, I think I would not change anything. And I've actually added more security to my building.
You have? Okay.
Yeah, more than the state required. I actually went above and beyond. And this is why I actually... other people may not feel this way, but I feel like safety is number one.
Yeah.
And I tell my employees this too. I said, God forbid anything unfortunate event happens where people, you know, come in and want to do harm, you give them whatever they want.
Right.
Right. That's
you don't fight.
Yeah. Human life is the most important thing here. That's what we're fighting for. We're fighting for health. We're fighting for people to be able to consume a safe product. That you know, that's what we're after. We're not after anything else. So.
But I imagine that there were some risks with that. I mean, you are in an all cash business, right? I would imagine that is something you do think quite a bit
but
about.
But there's security measures in place to where you're not like, in essence, my building is more secure than a bank.
Okay.
Yeah. No, seriously. I mean, you can walk in. You can.
Absolutely.
All my doors are access controlled.
Yeah.
Along with most of the dispensaries in New York State, you can just walk into a bank. You can't just walk into my facility.
Right.
You know,
you have to be pre-approved. Yeah.
You have to be pre-approved. Your ID has to be scanned. We know who you are before you enter the building. And that's, you know, that's a sense of security. And I think my customers will appreciate that in the long run. Some people don't want their ID scanned because they're worried about the backlash of whatever personal issues they have going on.
Right.
They just don't want the government to know that they're inside of a facility. But I don't actually report that information.
You don't? Okay.
Yeah, so.
Okay. That's just part of the security apparatus?
Yeah, that's just to make sure that you're 21.
Yeah.
You know?
And because of the nature of the cash business and with the high levels of cash that these stores have, Michael's banking partner requires a really sophisticated transportation process. I'll leave it at that. For the cash to go back and forth.
Okay. Yeah. But that's something, these are all things that have to be considered, right? It's a cost of doing business.
It's a cost of doing business. And you know, I own a business prior to this, and it's just cost of doing business. Like, it's just as if, like, I sell trading cards as my other business. And it would be as if I was mad that I had to purchase boxes and tape and peanut packing peanuts. You know what I mean? It's just like it's the cost of doing business.
Comes with the territory.
You factor it in. You know what I mean?
And Nick, just in terms of getting this up off the ground and working with Michael and potentially other clients as well, I mean, is this been a long process? Like, let's say just, you know, off the top of my head, if someone came to you, how soon do you think you could get somebody up and running with their own business? I mean, it's
the client needs to understand they're going to be in for the long haul. I mean, with Michael, I think it's been almost 2 years since we started working together. You know, he applied in 2022. We got his license in February of 2024.
Okay.
And opened a few weeks ago, and there's still an ongoing client service relationship as he's looking to expand and do other things and making sure he's always in compliance with the regulations. But I will say it's an extremely rewarding project to be a part of. You know, other aspects of the law are great and are interesting, and deals come and then they close. But I feel like, you know, in the cannabis space, it's really kind of a relationship, long-term relationship between the client and the lawyer. And it's a large, you know, these are large obstacles to overcome, but the reward is even greater on the other side once, you know, you've reached that goal.
Right. And your eye was on the prize, Michael, the whole time. I mean, I'm sure there were frustrations, you know, day to day with why don't I have this yet? Why am I not in business? But you kind of kept the maintained your optimism, I guess, throughout this process.
I trusted Nick.
Yeah.
I trusted Nick, and in the beginning, I will say this, I didn't trust the OCM. I trust the OCM with everything now.
You do now? Okay.
I do now.
Okay. You think they've righted the ship?
And not because they let me open, just because I've seen what they've gone through. I've seen what they had to put up with over the last several months.
Yeah, and like their philosophy was, you know, towards the end as we were getting ready to open and there were still like a number of regulatory issues that we had to meet and things we had to do, their philosophy was, hey guys, let's figure out how to get this done together. Yeah. It wasn't, oh no, you didn't do this, come back in 2 months.
Yeah.
It was, okay, you're close. Let's just tinker with this a little bit. I think if you do this way.
So a partnership.
It was really a partnership.
You got the sense that,
exactly.
that they were eager to get
shops
open.
Our success is their success and vice versa.
Right.
Yeah. After talking to them, especially on the phone, you understood that like they cared. They wanted this to work.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever you read about in the newspapers and you saw on the TV and stuff like that, again, those are biased statements, if you will. And I just really, really hope that the things that OCM has accomplished and the things that they have done does not go overlooked by some of the mistakes and some of the stuff that has happened. Yeah. And not necessarily mistakes on OCM's part. It's just, listen, like you said in the beginning, it's growing pains, right?
Right. They were dealt in some respects an impossible hand, right? Yeah. Because I think some of the original sin here was in how the legislation itself was drafted, right?
There were problems. It was impossible,
right? And there are no shortcuts in this industry,
right?
No. You know, you have to follow the regulations, and you have to pay attention to what OCM says,
right?
And if you don't, and you end up not getting the decision you want, you really need to look inward and say, well, what did I do wrong?
Yeah. And just to bolster what both of you are saying regarding, you know, the Office of Cannabis Management, I mean, the real criticism that I heard a lot of someone who spends a lot of time in Albany was that it really lies with the legislature and how they went about doing this, which is kind of putting the cart before the horse. They legalized marijuana before you had a regular regulatory framework on which to get it up and running, right? And that's a tough thing to play catch up on.
But to further on that, I don't think it's even legally possible to have the framework in place if you don't legalize it first. It's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg,
right?
So I think people just need to understand that, like, these are human beings that set out on an unfathomable path, an impossible task to control one of the biggest states in the country, you know, on a brand new market, you know, and do it the right way. You know, that's the other thing, too. Like, you look at other states.
And, you know, in New York's
goal, they've had their
own
growing pains.
New York's goal was to create, you know, an equitable marketplace and give kind of priority to people like Michael who, you know, were dealt an unfortunate hand earlier in his life.
Which other states did not.
Which other states did not do. Yeah. And would you say that's been successful overall, Nick? Is that your assessment of it?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. I think the 100 stores that are open as of today are a real testament to what OCM is trying to do. And I think there's going to be a lot more success kind of on the horizon.
Yeah,
yeah.
And what is your sense going forward? I mean, you now have about 100 some odd shops opened. What do you think that's going to look like a year or so from now in terms of being able to get more businesses up and running?
So, you know, the Office of Cannabis Management is trying to balance out the market and figure out what the right number of stores are throughout the state.
Okay.
And I don't think they have that answer yet. Today's meeting.
It's a huge state, by the way.
Yeah. The cannabis
some people in New York City tend to think New York City is New York City. No, no, no. New York City is gigantic.
Yeah.
The cannabis
really right? And it's very diverse. I mean, it's rural, it's suburban, it's urban. I mean, it's a very widespread, you know, place.
But I think they're going to, you know, in December, kind of look at the past year and make a determination as to how many more stores they think are required going forward to meet the need of the consumers. So I'm not really sure they have an answer yet.
Right.
It is definitely a balancing act. But, you know, part of that conversation is the ability of either local or state law enforcement authorities to shut down the illegal stores.
Right. A lot will pretend will sort of hang on what comes out of that budget and whether or not local authorities have the ability to do that. But I will say it's fair to point out that it's been accelerating. I mean, certainly getting out of the gate, you had so few initially, and that has really expanded.
Oh, it expanded
the last several months.
Yeah. Just today, they approved 45 new licenses kind of across the supply chain. And at every meeting, every month, the Cannabis Control Board is granting new licenses. So, yeah, they're
right.
It's definitely a growth area. I know they and I think they're working kind of internally on how to fast track and speed up their review process of applications.
Right.
You know, so we're excited. You know, we have probably 50 other applications that we are actively working on, and you know, we're excited. We think a lot of them are going to get to the finish line.
Yeah. No, it's an exciting place to be, and it's good to see that we are in this space and that there is actually progress being made. All right, we are going to leave it there. Michael, Nick, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
The Lobbying Insider is a production of Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron, LLP, New York's premier middle market law firm, practicing in over 20 areas, including commercial litigation, economic development, real estate, and, of course, government relations. The Lobbying Insider is produced by Joe Benti, and our sound recording engineer is Devante Addison. Publicity by Jody Fisher PR with Bethann Mayer at Lemon Seed Creative Managing Social Media. Our podcast platform manager is Monica Thomas. I'm Zach Fink, host of the podcast, and if you'd like to help us spread the word about our show, please share it with colleagues and friends, and be sure to subscribe on your platform of choice. It can be found on Apple, Audible, Google, iHeart, and Spotify platforms. Thanks for joining us.